Sometimes the future isn't just written. Sometimes it's rewritten. And sometimes it fights back. You're listening to the Curvature Chronicles.
Welcome back to the Curvature Chronicles. In the last episode of the Curvature Key, we met Sarah and Rashe. Will their whom is going to blink first match end in a throwdown? Will our hero Castor Ames get coffee spilled on him again? Or will the book artifact tell him something even worse? You came to the right place to find out. And now, episode 2.
The Kren tried to use the portal anyway. Sarah felt before she saw her drink shake and spill over.
Really? That's the second cup of coffee you've cost me today.
He distorts a little, but then flickers back to reality.
Trying to open a portal without a portal creator is not going to work.
He looks nervous, but says nothing.
You can't stabilize and travel through the portal without the tether.
Finally, he spoke, "Just checking. Besides, it's not like I don't know who's carrying my tether." She stared, just waiting for him to make a move. No doubt he was deadly, or he wouldn't be here now. She was pretty deadly too when she had to be. She was sure that this Kren being would give her the opportunity to prove that again. Almost as if he read her mind, he stood and started to back away, never taking his eyes off her for an instant.
"We will settle up some other time."
"Why not now?"
she taunted. He smiled a ghastly smile. Kren really were horrific looking.
"Soon enough."
Then he left Boomers and headed down an alley. Sarah got up and ran outside. The heat was still rising from the fractured air where his cloaking field shimmered. Kren couldn't really change shape permanently like a Zarathian could. The alley behind the coffee shop smelled of Java and sweat and just old night air. A half-lit security light flickered overhead, casting faint shadows in the dusk.
"Hey!"
she yelled at the Kren.
"I asked you a question. I expect an answer."
The Kren dropped his head in irritation and turned. His footsteps echoed as he came toward her. Controlled, intentional footsteps. He threw open his coat. Sarah could feel the electrical buzz drain from the alley. She knew he must have disabled his cloaking device. Sure enough, instances later, her eyes were rewarded with a horrific, by human and Zarathian standards, looking Kren, complete with body armor and brown-gray sandpaper skin. The Kren continued walking toward her. Did he think he'd scare her? Funny guy for a Kren. He just looked wrong. Too ridged. Too angular.
"Nice armor,"
Sarah said.
"You should have brought more."
Vrashek paused.
"Why should I have brought more? You should be terrified in a superior being's presence. What are you?"
Now he watched, studying her, looking through her.
"Superior being? I'm the end of the line for you."
He lunged at her, closing the gap between them impossibly fast. She was ready. He had targeted her head. It would have been a quick and efficient end to the battle, if his hands had ever reached her. She turned through his grab, dropped low, and drove her right palm into his sternum. She twisted her hips for extra torque and put all of her weight into it. A sharp crack came from under the Kren's armor. A sound like that should not come from armored bodies. Vrashek grunted and recoiled. His balance faltered, and he almost went down. Almost. That force. That precision. The female hit with 3 times what he'd expected from her. Zarathian? She must be. Sarah dove at the Kren, trying not to give him time to think. Vrashek spun and slipped, a long obsidian-looking blade out of a wrist housing. He missed with the blade, but was fast enough to deflect her rush past him. Turning quickly, Sarah threw a small silver disc. It struck and lodged in his breastplate. Vrashek felt a surge of electromagnetic distortion surge through him, overloading his armor and scrambling his senses. She looked up, and a crowd had started to gather. Sarah practically screamed.
Stay away, you creeper! I'll call the police!
Sarah turned and ran towards the gathered group.
Asshole has been following me.
Sarah looked back and the Kren was gone. Her hands trembled, not from fear, but raw anger bordering on fury. His presence on Earth, the nerve of it, was beyond audacious. It was strategic, calculated. Vrashek's vision cleared. He moved as quickly as he could, away from that creature. His breastplate was ruined from the pulse weapon. His ribs screeched with almost every step. Finally, he got down in an old culvert and rested. He gently felt his ribs. Vrashek didn't think they were broken, but could very well be cracked. Through armor and kren, flesh and bone. That wouldn't have been possible for a female from this planet. She must have been Zarathian, shifted to human form. He pulled out his helix crystal shard and tried to open a line of communication. Vrashek adjusted the thermal coils strapped beneath his armor, but the heat bleeding into his chest barely took the edge off the Earth's biting chill. The air here tasted wrong, thin, wet, an insult to lungs built for the dry, searing winds of Kren homeworld plains. Each breath scraped at his throat, a reminder that every day he lingered here brought him closer to collapse. But the real wound was deeper than flesh. The book rejected him. He had undergone the procedures, the gene incisions, the triple helix graft attempts, the brutal weeks where his body had been pushed to the edge of failure, all for nothing. The portal key pulsed like a living thing when he touched it, but instead of opening to his command, it recoiled, shoving him out of its strange dimension with a force that left his bones humming and his vision white. A Zarathian artifact, refusing the one who had sacrificed more than any soldier in the collective to claim it. He clenched his jaw, fangs pricking his own gums. Sarah arrived at the Four Corners bar 20 minutes later. She made her way behind the bar and up into the attic. The Four Corners was a place where she worked part-time currently for two reasons. It was amazing what people would tell a bartender when they were drunk. And two, and most important, the Four Corners bar was a Zarathian gate. After the Arindor's failure, one of the destroyed helix crystals had fallen and landed on the side of this hill and created a tremendous portal that touched four different places in the universe. No telling how many cavemen or goats, bah, might have wandered through it and wound up God knows where in the universe. Zarathian technology kept the portals locked now, unless they were opened purposely. Like now, when Sarah needed to speak with her handler. She sat down and placed her left forearm into a slight depression on the panel to activate it. The sigils on the panel lit up to match the sigils lighting up on her skin. Connection was made.
Sarah Sudis. Secure channel requested authorization. 4R, Z Lambda 7. Preliminary contact report.
The corner darkened, then glowed softly blue. An image appeared before her. Her command liaison, Command Overseer Triel Vaughn.
Agent Sudis.
The image gave a subtle nod.
We're secure. Go ahead.
Sarah didn't waste any time.
I have an artifact sighting.
The image frowned.
There was an artifact theft not that long ago. You verified this is the artifact?
Yes. I've been in contact with it personally. It's not dormant. It's active. and I know this sounds wrong, but it seems to have synced. Partially, anyway, with a human male. Castor Ames is the male, and he is biologically unusual. I'll wait until I do a complete gene scan. I'll include that data in my full report transmission.
Yes, Agent Sudis, I agree. That is most unusual.
She offered a small tilt of her head.
Please go on.
Yes, there is more.
Sarah's voice was tightening. She must look anxious. The commander knew she had more to say. She made a small mental note to work on that.
I've made contact with a Kren here on Earth. There's every indication it was him that used the portal in the first place. But from what little data I have, I'd be willing to go on record that he wasn't trying to come to Earth.
Trielle's brows lifted ever so slightly.
Repeat that, Agent Sudis.
A Kren agent is here on Earth. I've confronted him twice in regards to ensuring the artifact is safe. If he didn't use it to get here, then he is at the least very aware of it and attempting to secure it. I believe he's also...
Sarah finally found the word.
Deteriorating.
Trielle Van's pause was long. Almost uncomfortable.
Deteriorating would make sense, Agent Sudis, since he probably hasn't had the same genetic safeguards added that you have. The trip through the portal may very well have damaged his DNA. Plus, the local atmosphere is too cold and oxygen-heavy for him to be stable.
The commander's image barely moved.
This is the first confirmed presence of the Kren on Earth. This could significantly alter our risk models and timelines. Do not engage again with the assassin unless given express orders. Observe. Report. Do not interfere.
Sarah hesitated.
But Commander, he's dangerous. He is already tracking the human who has the book.
And are you tracking the book as well?
Contacting the human as necessary?
Yes, Commander.
The image nodded.
As I knew you would be. Our protocols exist, Agent, for reasons. Your mission currently is to monitor the artifact and its host's strange development. I will pass this on to the Council, and escalation will come from there if necessary.
Another pause, but then Trielle continued more softly.
Sarah, I trust your judgment, but don't confuse judgment for action. Not yet.
Sarah gritted her teeth, but managed to speak.
Acknowledged.
The image snapped off, leaving Sarah in the darkened attic of the bar again. As she left, watching the curls of her breath in the cool night air, something was nagging at her. Commander Trielle's tone, too calm and measured. Sarah pushed it down and continued toward the campus parking garage. Little did Sarah know that Commander Trielle had already opened a different communication channel to a different agent across the stars. That agent's name was Vrashek. That was when the comm unit in his gauntlet blinked once, not the hard green of collective orders, but the soft silver of his other contact. Vrashek tapped the control.
I was told this channel was dead unless I called.
A voice, smooth and low, answered in Zorathian.
You didn't call, so I did.
The hollow shimmered to life, revealing only a silhouette, tall, poised, with the faint outline of ceremonial Zorathian High Command armor. The figure's face remained hidden in shadow, but the voice carried authority that could move fleets.
I hear the book resists you,
the figure said. Vrashek's claws flexed.
It defies me. even after I let your surgeons cut into my DNA. Even after I endured their poison serums. It refuses to open. Why?
You knew this wouldn't be easy. The book was never meant for outsiders. It responds to bloodlines, to resonance. Even with your modified genome, it knows you are not of the line.
A line?
Vrashek growled.
Ancestral Zorathians who once carried it. Your enhancements make you close. Close enough to touch it without dying outright. But not enough to command it.
And yet, there is a Zorathian on this world who can.
Vrashek said, narrowing his eyes.
Yes, the female Sarah. She should be able to wield the artifact. At this point, she is not just an obstacle to your mission. She is the mission. The book will stay with her unless she is removed. Permanently removed.
Vrashek's spines bristled.
I've tried. She is fast, strong, and always one step ahead. It is as if she knows where I will strike.
She most likely does. She is one of the finest warriors in the Empire. And that is why you will stop striking. Instead, you will let her come to you. There are ways to shape her path.
Vrashek tilted his head.
What do you propose?
Pressure the human. Caster Ames, he is the book's current anchor. He knows nothing of what it truly is, but his attachment to her makes him vulnerable. Threaten the bond, and she will overextend. Overextension is when even the strong die.
And then the artifact will be mine, to carry out my mission.
No! Not yours. Ours. The collective will have it. And we will ensure the right portals are opened first, to carry out our mission.
The Kryn's eyes narrowed at the subtle shift in tone, but he let it pass.
And if she resists to the last?
Then,
the voice said, cutting like a blade sliding free of its sheath.
We burn that world until she begs to hand it over.
The silver light cut out. Vrashek sat in the darkness, the cold gnawing at him again. He did not know this shadow's true rank or allegiance. But the words, "not yours," echoed in his mind. For now they wanted the same thing. For now. It's well after midnight when Castor catches up with Sarah. He finds her alone on the campus observatory roof, buried under a blanket despite it being around 70 degrees. Sarah wears the blanket almost like a cape. Castor walked closer. Sarah, sitting cross-legged with her ever-present cup of coffee, is looking up at the stars. He can hear her hum faintly. She looks up and sees him about 2 feet away from her. She doesn't look surprised that he's found her. Of course, she never looks surprised about much of anything, Castor thought.
You know, if you're trying to blend in, this mysterious rooftop stargazing thing might blow your cover.
That statement, which he had hoped would get her talking, or at least have her give away something about herself or past, failed completely. If anything, she looked amused. She held her cup out towards him.
You bring the book? Or did it tell you to stash it somewhere?
Oh, I have it.
He swung his backpack off his shoulder and in front of himself, patting it with his hand as he did so.
I haven't let it out of my sight.
Sarah slurped her coffee, not taking her eyes off him.
Smart.
They sat in silence for a couple of beats. The type of silence that people with secrets to share have. Castor decided to plunge onward.
I saw what you did at the cafe.
Sarah didn't respond. She just kept looking at him.
With the table,
he continued.
when you got your, well, my pen out from underneath it.
Another slurp, but nothing else.
And I read your student record and some of your papers.
He pinched his fingers together in front of her nose.
Or what tiny few of them exist.
She shrugged, almost imperceptibly.
I've written more on a number of things, but my guidance counselor recommended that we keep most of what I write out of print. After that whole Air Force visit to campus.
Let me guess. Celestial Exiles and the Ethics of Non-Human Integration. Would that be the one?
He turns a little more toward her in exasperation.
And will you please tell me what a non-terrestrial physiology exemption is?
Sarah, her violet eyes never leaving him, still slurping coffee, still saying nothing. Castor tried a different route.
Look, Sarah, I'm not asking for your life story, but I think I deserve a little honesty. I mean, basically, I'm a walking target because of this thing.
He lifts the book out of his backpack, hefts it a couple of times, and then puts it back.
What I'm saying, Sarah, is that you're not exactly the standard physics nerd, are you?
She set her coffee down and exhaled.
No, I'm not.
There was a long pause after that, until Castor didn't think she was going to go on.
I wasn't born here, but I've lived here long enough to understand.
She pointed to her chest.
Understand how the people here think.
She took Castor's hand in hers and pressed it just under her throat.
How you feel.
She let go of his hand and pointed again at her heart.
Some of that is just stuck, I guess.
The blood was pounding through Castor's ears, to point he'd had to really focus a lot to get what Sarah was saying. The male part of him was thinking that she not only smells like starlight, but feels like it too. Another part, the part that had done the research in the library, snapped him out of it.
So, are you telling me you're an alien?
He shook his head rapidly.
Like, not a human? Like, X-Files?
She stroked her chin and frowned.
X-what?
Now she shook her head.
Well, anyway, there are a lot of, let's say, people not from around here that you walk past all the time. Maybe they weren't born here, but we coexist just fine.
Aha!
He pointed at her. You just said, we. He leaned slightly away.
That's what the exemption is, isn't it? Non-humans don't have human physiology.
Castor looked Sarah up and down and took a deep breath.
You don't have human biology either, do you?
She playfully punched him in the arm.
Oh, come on. I'm not alien. I'm like alien adjacent.
Now Castor was just confused.
You're what adjacent?
I'm biologically adjacent. We share a lot of those two DNA strands you have, and two of the three that I have. Ah, but mentally?
She tilted her head.
Just depends on the day.
Castor ran his finger through his hair.
The guy that tried to take the book? He's like you?
Sarah's jaw tightened and her voice lowered.
No. He's something a lot worse.
Castor pulled the book out again and laid it in his lap, idly ruffling the pages.
He's from your planet?
No. We're not from the same planet. We're not from the same anywhere.
The words land like a stone between them.
Okay. So you called him a thief earlier in the park. Obviously, he stole this book. So what is going on? Some sort of interplanetary treasure hunt? A scavenger war?
There's a war, yes.
Way bigger than this planet or even this galaxy. Entire systems have been destroyed over weapons. Over artifacts. like that book. It doesn't just write your future. It's not just a map, Caster. It's not even just a weapon. It's a door. And a weapon. And its story. And ours. Is being written in real time.
He studies her face. The shadows of starlight seem almost caught in her purple hair. Caster forces himself away from that thought.
All right. Let's just say that's all true.
She starts to say something, but Caster holds up a hand.
Let me finish, Sarah, please.
She crosses her arms, but says nothing more. He nods.
Let's say all this is, and I believe it could be. My next question is, why? Why are you here on Earth?
I like the coffee.
She crosses her arms a little tighter and frowns.
And for galactic emergencies. Like this. Just to make sure it doesn't win. That he doesn't win.
Caster felt a coldness start up his spine that wasn't there a second ago.
And me? I'm just a dumb native in the middle of this that picked up the wrong antique.
She smiled softly.
No, Caster. You picked the right one.
They sit in silence a while longer. The wind starts blowing, softly rustling her blanket. Caster wonders if solar sails sound like that. Then she adds, almost as an afterthought,
You're handling all this pretty well, by the way. Most people start crying by now.
I'm too tired to cry right now. Maybe later.
He mutters, puzzlement creeping onto his face.
Hey, wait a minute. Most people start crying by now? How many times have you done this?
Counting this time?
Yes, counting this time.
She scratches her chin in thought.
Well, counting this time, it would be once.
He shakes his head. But before he can speak, she holds up a hand, just like he had done earlier. The gesture isn't lost on Caster. He plays along with a hint of a smile by crossing his arms and staying silent.
I believe that if I had done this before, most people, almost certainly, would have started crying before now.
Caster laughs and starts to respond, but before he can, the book starts to glow. He sets it down on the ground, and it opens up to a page with the words, Soon you will see the stars from the other side.
You, yes you, have been listening to The Curvature Chronicles, Book 1, The Curvature Key. The book has spoken. You will soon see the stars from the other side. In our next episode, Caster discovers that to move forward, he has to go into the past. If you're enjoying the story, don't forget to follow the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening. For bonus lore, short stories, and updates, visit thecurvaturechronicles.space. You can also find us at NewtonSLaw at CurveChron on X. Until next time, keep your eyes on the curve. Because every story bends reality.